Our next paper is, what can I do with this? Using existing language documentation for teaching and learning. Our speakers are Raquel Maria Sapien and Tracy Hiram Etz.
Hi, so in this presentation we'll illustrate ways to use existing products of documentation to develop materials for teaching and learning. We're going to hopefully help answer the question of what can I do with this by sharing ways to develop and incorporate existing resources into learning tools for different skills, levels, age groups, and or settings.
Could you speak up, please?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
So for this talk, we address revitalization narrowly in that we're talking about teaching and learning activities in a formal schooling setting, but we acknowledge that revitalization and a comprehensive revitalization project includes way more than just teaching and learning in a formal setting. So just to give you an overview, we'll talk briefly about documentation and the challenges of using existing documentary materials in support of revitalization. Then we'll talk about the ideal situation of projects that integrate documentation and revitalization from the outset through collaboration among stakeholders in a project. Then we'll talk about the reality of working with existing materials in a revitalization project. We'll illustrate ways of using language documentation materials, and our emphasis is on extracting maximal benefit from each product by illustrating multiple uses for a single piece of documentation. A lot of times you start out with something, use it one time, and then throw it by the wayside. Hopefully by the end of this talk, you'll have more ideas for how to use a single piece of documentation for multiple uses. And some of the different situations might include multiple skills, speaking, listening, reading, writing, grammar, and cultural competence. You might use the same tool for multiple levels, including novice, intermediate, and advanced. Or you might create activities for a variety of age groups and settings in support of lesson goals. So by documentation, we mean the traditional dictionary, grammar, and text that might be published resources, but also any audio or video recordings that might be available, and then other materials that might be a little bit less organized in terms of metadata or what you know about what's in those materials. We were thinking specifically of those tapes that somebody found in their grandmother's basement and aren't quite sure what to do with them. And there are several challenges to using documentary corpora in this way. One of our biggest challenges is support for communicative competence. That is, we're looking to develop resources that foster interaction among learners rather than teaching translational equivalents or word lists. So we're looking to extract conversational conversational chunks. So learners need language that's functional in nature. So this includes things like greetings and leave takings or making requests or asking questions. And one of the big challenges with using documentation for this purpose is finding this kind of language in an existing corpus. Another challenge is that a lot of grammatical descriptions are opaque to non-specialists, and so being able to extract functionally useful language from existing grammatical descriptions can be a big challenge. And if we're talking about tapes in an attic, again, the metadata may not really exist. You might not actually know what's in the resources you have. And finally, descriptions of language tend to be descriptions of what a language does and how it works. And these are about the language, and we're interested in actually using the language. So in a lot of linguistic descriptions, you can extract things, say, from the examples, not necessarily from the description itself. So ideally, a language documentation project would involve collaboration among multiple stakeholders at the outset. Stakeholders would work together to identify and prioritize mutually beneficial goals. And a maximally useful documentation project, and that is one that could support revitalization in a number of ways, would include culturally rich language that's functionally useful and used in appropriate natural and naturalistic settings. Unfortunately, a lot of what we have is not this ideal, and so Tracy's going to talk a little bit about the reality of dealing with existing materials.
We drew straws. She got the ideal, I got the reality. So the reality is sometimes there's the materials, and we have the feeling that the materials become the lesson. And that's really the biggest drawback, is letting the materials drive what's going to happen. What you really want to sit down is determine what is it you want your learners to be able to do at the end of day, week, month, that series. And then these materials serve as an awesome support for that. So rather than driving it and being stuck with that, you have what you want to do, and then these materials come in and they add that bonus. They're that extra push, that gravy. The other thing is being careful to remember that the materials are not going to teach the language, that it is the lesson, what's put together, and how it's delivered. So a lot of pressure on whoever's putting together the curriculum, the lessons, and delivering it to the classes. So what we wanted to do is give you some examples of, if you have something, some sort of documentation, here's a couple of different ways to think of it. Our goal is really for you to leave here thinking, I hadn't thought of that before, or I can do something with something I have that I wasn't sure what it is. So we're going to present a couple different ways to look at it. First, multiple skills, I'll present some ideas, and then Raquel will look at it in terms of taking something to multiple levels, and then I'll kind of do the mishmash at the end of what can you do. And then if any of you were lucky enough to see Joshua's presentation just earlier, he's got some great ideas on how to have that leveling, so thank you. So I'm going to do the classic, when we think of language teaching, we think in terms of listening, speaking, reading, writing, grammar, culture. It looks a little separate here, but as I go through it, you'll see there's a lot of overlap in the pieces, so you don't want to necessarily think of them completely separately, but I'm going to do that. I want to thank Ms. Vicky. We're going to use a dialogue that she has documented. We took a little clip of it. I'm going to play it just so you can have it in your head as I walk through some ideas to go with it. I'm maybe going to play it. Let's see if it works. Nope, didn't work. Okay. It was lovely. It's a nice piece using the Frog storybooks. If you're not familiar with them, they're wordless picture books, and people can do various things with them. They can describe what's going on. They can take on the role of characters. They can explain it to somebody else. And it was a nice little conversation about what was going on. I'll show you some pictures in a second here. So for listening, and what I want to emphasize throughout this is the lesson portion of it, thinking in terms of verbs of what can be done. So I've tried to make sure I did them all in verbs. But listening for specific details, so sometimes we do that with, okay, the audio is coming, and you're listening to find out who the people are, or find out what objects they use, or find out where something happened. So that's kind of a beginning listening activity. Dictation, where they just have to write down or re-record what they've heard. Finding answers to true-false questions. Really focused kind of listening as a good starter. Emotional prosody is a real nice thing that kind of gets lost when people do vocabulary or grammar learning. Just listening to the prosody of how people are speaking. Pulling out information for discussion. Ooh, I heard this really cool thing. Well, what was cool about it? What did you like? Like, creating context for talking about something, acting out what's heard, that works nicely with children. You know, they can listen to it and act it out, or draw it. Kids like drawing. So these are just kind of some, you listen and then you do something with it. In terms of speaking, so that was the receptive, and then what can they do, putting it out. Mimicking dialogue is just a way, they won't necessarily understand what's going on, but the mimicry of it begins to build that language learning. And that can turn into memorizing, taking on roles, paraphrasing, taking the entire thing that they've just heard and actually doing it all again, but with words they're more comfortable with or a phrasing they're more comfortable with, as well as grammar. Summarizing what's been listened to and being able to articulate what they heard works really well for, you get two for one out of that, really. What did they understand, and then what are they able to create? And realizing that those are two different things is important. Extending and adding information is a nice way to not just get stuck in that dialogue, per se, but what might happen next? What might be the next thing they talk about, and bringing in additional vocabulary there. And then pronunciation. Imitations of stress or intonation or pausing are really fun, especially with some of the storytelling. This story had, similar to Joshua's, some, you know, extended exuberance and that kind of thing that comes with storytelling, and it's nice for people to try and think about, oh, well, that did have a role, that did impact how the story was told. In terms of reading, this typically involves the transcript, so having the actual words in front of them, and some of the things are focusing on the components. So what are the components of, I'm going to say sentence, but don't becoming linguists, but you know, that chunk that has that subject, verb, object type piece in it. Prediction in terms of having read something. So even though you've listened to it, sometimes reading it changes it for people. They can predict differently, use different grammatical components. Defining vocabulary and making things salient. So when they read it, you know, having something bolded out really helps that pop, highlights or something like that. And writing skills, using them as frames and explaining what they're talking about, guessing what might come out next. So you're seeing there's a similar pattern in the reading, writing, speaking, listening, the same kinds of things can be used. In terms of grammatical skills, these are ways, again, you can have things pop out and that helps people to see what's going on. You're using the same dialogue that they heard or they read, but you're using it for a different purpose in terms of the grammar. And then the last little piece I want to mention is the culture, that you can pull out something. In this case, they were talking about jealousy or feeling sad, and it could be a cultural discussion of, do we do that within our culture? Is that an appropriate way to be? So Raquel's going to share how that would be with multiple levels.
So in addition to documentation like frog stories, often you have traditional stories. And so what I'm going to talk about is using a traditional story for multiple levels. There's a specific learning objective at each level, and my focus is on listening and speaking skills. So of course there'll be some overlap with the skills-based discussion that Tracy just did. Some of the listening and speaking skills that students might be expected to have at the end of each level, as novices, they ought to be able to comprehend and use memorized words and phrases. At low intermediate, they can be expected to comprehend and use basic information questions. And for each of these, I'm going to show you an activity that can support that. Then for higher intermediate level learners, they might be able to listen to a story out of sequence and then retell it in sequence. And then finally, advanced learners might be able to listen to two versions of a story, and after listening to the first version, hypothesize and predict what might be in the second, more elaborated version. And eventually, they might be able to compose their own story based on some of the components of the stories that you're using. I use a couple of stories that were documented in the late 50s by Berend Hoff in his Grammar of Karitnya, which he called Carib. And for a long time, this was the only available documentation of this language. I use this source because having these kinds of limited resources is a reality in many cases. One of the treasures of Hoff's grammar were the texts of stories that he had collected that he included in the back of the grammar. And they provide a pretty nice basis for extracting this functional language. We're going to look first at one that includes a dialogue between a couple of characters that can be used in support of the learning objectives for novice learners, so these memorized words and phrases. So this is the example. This is what it looks like in Hoff's grammar. I have a copied version. Don't tell anybody. It's out of print, so I think it's okay to make the copies. But at any rate, one of the challenges of using this kind of linguist-focused material is that it wasn't written for a non-specialized audience, and so the orthography tends to be pretty incomprehensible and not very accessible. So one of the first things was to translate it into a more practical orthography that's currently in use in the community. Additionally, this sort of side-by-side text translation is not very transparent either. So he used little slashes to separate out phrases, but you have to kind of go back and forth and the lines don't quite match up, so there might be more words in a line on the Karitnya side and then fewer on the English side. So it takes some patience to get through it. So the first step was to just take this and translate it. The other piece was to find this functional language. So even though it's a traditional story, there might be little conversations between characters in the story that can be used as the basis for little dialogues, and that's what I did here. Depending on learner characteristics, this particular story may or may not be appropriate for a wide audience. So it's a story about it ends up being a conversation between a Dutchman and a monster, and there's a lot of death and destruction and poisoning and things like that. So it depends on who your audience is. I don't know that I would use this with the youngest kids, but your mileage may vary. At any rate, even though it's the Dutchman talking to a monster, they greet each other in a culturally appropriate way, so I was able to extract that piece. So here's the sort of cleaned up version or translated version. On this side, you see the unmodified original dialogue that I extracted from the Goede Hoop story. And the original included a bunch of honorific markers. The Dutchman and the monster, for some reason, were speaking to each other in this very formal register. So there were quite a few. I suppose if I were talking to a monster, I would use a formal register as well. So they were using these honorific markers with each other, and they were kind of extending things into this register that wasn't quite what I was looking for novice learners. But nonetheless, there are components that could be pulled out. So you see I've highlighted the ones on this slide that I then pulled out over there. Another thing that was missing from the original was the response. So saying Mopui, have you come, is a very common greeting for somebody who's been away from the village, but it didn't include Wopui, the I have come, the response to that. So I had to kind of mix and match and expand it there. So again, the original was much too rich for this level where the focus is on short, memorizable words and phrases, but nonetheless I was able to extract components that could be used for a novice group. And later, the original version could be used for more advanced learners. So let's look at another story that I'll use with three additional levels, starting with low intermediate. This particular story was called Oriole in Hoff's time. The speakers I work with it now call it Iguana Woman, and in it there's this very sour-faced woman who walks around with a grumpy look on her face all the time, and so they call her Iguana Woman, and they want to try to make her laugh, and everybody in the community comes to try to make her laugh. And finally they ask Oriole, who flaps around in a really funny way, and he manages to make her laugh. So again, the first step was to rewrite the story into the local orthography, and I also extracted just a small excerpt that could be used with intermediate learners. So this particular story illustrates some of the benefits of using a traditional story in support of revitalization. It's engaging, like the frog leg story. It's kind of a funny story. It includes some useful dialogue. But note, too, I've highlighted here, it contains a lot of repetition. So there's a lot of repetition of the word laugh in multiple grammatical contexts. So it's used as a question. It's used with a negation marker. So you can kind of track that through. So learners have a little something to hang their hats on. They know Awa is laughing. So they know it has something to do with laughing, and then they can expand their knowledge that way. So the speaking and learning objective I focused on for intermediate low is the ability to comprehend and use basic information questions. And this particular story provides a lot of opportunities for that. Now note, a full lesson would teach the various question forms as well as appropriate answers. So the activity I'm showing you here is a practice activity within the context of a greater lesson. So this practice activity could be the case that you give students the answer and they need to generate the question that might have elicited that answer. And you could do that in a number of ways, either spoken, they could have little audio clips that they listen to and then have to generate the question, or you could have sentence strips on paper that they could use, depending on whether you've introduced literacy. At the next level, high intermediate, students can use more complex forms. And again, our goal is to extract maximal usefulness from a single resource. So this is the same story, and a way that it could be used for a slightly higher level would be to have these sort of scattered sentences. So you've got the full narrative here, and you would give students either audio clips or paper strips that have the sentences on them, and then they would need to put them in the correct sequence. For a lower level, you could include within the scattered sentences the ones that have the discourse markers for like the beginning, the middle, and the end of a story, and so they could have those to hang their hats on. They go, okay, I know this one goes first, for sure. For more advanced learners, you might give them those off out of the gate and then allow them to reorganize the others. And this, again, could be written, but it could also be spoken. You might give students individual student strips or audio clips, and they would have to arrange themselves in order and then tell the story in order, so several students are involved in resequencing this story. So for advanced learners, they might create an original story of their own using elements of the story that you've used. They also might compare and contrast different versions of the same story. And this was a situation that we were fortunate enough to be able to create kind of by happenstance. I had the good fortune of working with family members of the consultants who Berend Hoff had worked with. So this is Julian Mondé, who told the original Oriole story, and this is his grandson, Ferdinand Mondé, who retold the story for me. And the retelling was much more elaborate than the original story. So in his retelling, he included a moral that wasn't in the original story. But this supports that advanced goal of predicting what that more elaborate story might be. So in listening to the less elaborate story, oh gosh, what do you expect? What can you predict? And then listen to that story. Were you right? Did the more elaborate story include the things you thought they might? So although this wasn't specifically designed for pedagogical uses, it ended up being a really nice resource to have both of these versions of the story. And I was going to play them for you, but we're out of time, so maybe at the end we'll be able to. So next, Tracy's going to illustrate a few other ways that existing documentation might be used in other contexts.
You're out of time.
Okay.
You're in the question
time. We're in the question time, right?
Go for it.
Okay. We'll go ahead and take questions. Do you want to know what that is?
Okay.
We'll take questions.
What is it?
So we just wanted to end with, she had her lovely clean data, and we wanted to show the reality of documentation is something like this sometimes, and you have to search and find something like numbers, and then you can use them for your lessons. So.
Well, you talk about intermediate, low, high, and advanced, but do you have a guide or a rubric that sort of specifies, like for speaking and listening that you go by, or is there something?
I borrowed the benchmarks that the Northwest Indian Language Institute had developed, and they were based on ACTFL standards, but with more attention to cultural competence.
I could say there was community input in there, but really I think for the benchmarks, any language, you kind of have to develop your own because the languages are so different, so to find something you like to use as a guideline.
But the ACTFL standards are a nice starting place, and then you can, rather than adopt them whole scale, you can look at them and go, not so much, yes, not so much, and you can move things around as you have a feel for it.
Yeah, and I think, too, from our work, too, is we get our students to tell a story, and we get some competency and everything like that, and, you know, reaching our goals and everything, but we're forgetting that part of our culture is the retelling and retelling and retelling. So, you know, these stories have to keep going, and as they grow, they need to grow with their story, too. So that's, we get so busy putting in stories in them, but we have to remember, we have to keep recycling those stories to them. Because if they're learning these skills, these grammar skills, and they're not practicing them continually, they lose them.
And those can be added on, you know, just as, say, with little kids, we teach photosynthesis by they grow one plant in the classroom and one plant in the closet. But by college, we're looking at all the cellular level interactions. It's the same kind of thing with a story, taking it to that more advanced level, changing the time period, adding some more details to it. So that works well.
Yeah, so I mean, because we know the reality of like the documents that we get, either like oral stories or something that someone already did. My question is, how much time and effort did you put into editing the story so that you could have a cleaner version to show your, I mean, to
10, 15 years?
Okay, I mean, yeah. I mean, because I mean, I have a lot of narratives, but it's been difficult for me to develop materials useful for learners from those narratives, even though they're rich in lexical and grammatical structures. Probably that's the problem. That, you know,
yeah, time, and I don't mean to be flippant about that. I mean, time is a big component here. It's really hard to take the time to do that. For me, doing it alone is never going to get me very far. So finding that one quirky language learner who really digs this stuff and wants to play around with those texts, and even just the translating into a different orthography is a big step that takes a lot of time and doesn't take a whole lot of training to be able to do. So you might be able to find somebody to do that piece and then continue with the other pieces.
We were just talking on the way down, you know, would there be a way to simplify that timeline by having somebody retell that story as though they're telling it to a younger person, to a child? So take that story and retell it. That might save you some of the steps where you'd be thinking about each vocabulary term and each morphological marking and each sentence structure and then they can retell it, and you're like, oh, of course, that's the simplified version. So there might be ways to save 15 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.